Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Betsy Woodruff of National Review. And for Jim Garrity today, I'm Craig Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual, though the first one's not so much good as, I guess, interesting, Betsy. It's the fact that usually in elections past, Virginia has trended in statewide races a little bit more red. Lately, it's been a different story. Obama won it twice. There's two Democratic senators and so forth. But the Republicans easily won the governor's office there 4 years ago by almost 20 points. And in New Jersey, that's typically a blue state, but Chris Christie beat John Corzine 4 years ago. And this year, it's basically been a victory lap. Barbara Buono has provided no real drama to this race whatsoever. And in Virginia, Ken Cuccinelli, who is the darling certainly of conservatives, has not been able to even to unite his own party. He's tightened the polls a little bit against Terry McAuliffe in the last few days, but there's still not a single poll out there that shows him tied or winning. So it looks like it's going to be a split decision in the opposite of the way you'd normally expect it. So a lot of soul searching perhaps for both parties. Betsy, what's the takeaway for conservatives here?
Definitely a situation where the world's turned upside down. It's pretty much the opposite of what you'd expect. I think 15 years ago, you said that New Jersey would be electing an incredibly popular Republican governor and Virginia would have, you know, almost the deck stacked for Democrats. People would just laugh a little bit. So I think the takeaway here is that it's very important to focus on the specific circumstances of each of these races. The temptation that I think you'll hear is to say, well, Chris Christie's a moderate and he's doing well. Therefore, the future of the GOP lies with moderate Republicans. And also, Ken Cuccinelli is very conservative, and that's why he's losing. So we need to purge the conservatives. I think that's a narrative that we'll probably see emerging. But that really glosses over a lot of the very specific elements of these two races and what makes them not necessarily models for extrapolating larger trends. I think especially in Cuccinelli's case, there are so many weird exigencies that you can't really plan for. The fact that he's been struggling in terms of fundraising, the fact there was just this huge disaster as far as Bob McDonnell's administration and the scandals that emerged, and then also the government shutdown, which seems to do a significant amount of damage to his campaign at a really crucial juncture. These are things that could happen to any viable Republican candidate.
So we're just looking at the numbers, obviously. I think just about anyone would admit that Christie's likely to win tomorrow, and it's not likely to be close. There's probably some conservatives listening to the opening of this discussion, Betsy, and saying, what are you doing? Ken Cuccinelli's single digits in just about every poll. Some have it as close as 2 points. Why are you writing him off right now? A lot of the analysis suggests that, you know, it's a big difference between a presidential race and a gubernatorial race. The turnout for the Bob McDonnell election was around 40%, and folks this year expecting between 30 and 40. It's still possible for Cuccinelli to do well. I think the attorney general's race is the Republicans' best chance, even if he does win. It was a heck of a lot closer than it should have been.
It's certainly still theoretically possible that Cuccinelli pulls off a win, but first, statistically speaking, the odds are not great, especially if you look at polling averages. And then second, assuming that he does win, it still looks very, very bad for Cuccinelli and for his team because it's so much closer than it should have been. I mean, you have newspapers refusing to endorse anyone because McAuliffe is such an abysmal candidate. The fact that McAuliffe was, you know, involved in an investment scheme that capitalized on people who are terminally ill and that doesn't seem to really have registered in the polls, you know, I mean, this is astonishing. You know, this kind of stuff is surreal. It's not going to be just an incredibly happy day on Wednesday for Cuccinelli regardless, although it is still possible that he squeaks by.
We'll be watching that one. And yes, the dissection of the odd year race is always fascinating because whatever party wins tries to make it a bellwether for the entire nationwide slate of elections next year, which is obviously taking it a bit too far.
Everybody wants to do that because, you know, you want to be able to say, oh, big picture. Oh, how does this relate to 2016? And put some sort of presidential prognostications in your headlines. And everybody likes that. You know, that's good for cable news. But at the end of the day, like what happens in New Jersey as far as how successful Chris Christie does, honestly, it's hard to say there's any other race in the country that's going to be comparable to his situation.
All right, on to martini number two now. And the story for Obamacare just keeps getting worse and worse. There's a story in the Wall Street Journal on the commentary page written by a woman who survived stage 4 gallbladder cancer. And she's got a relatively complicated healthcare coverage system. There's two different providers for her. And she basically explains throughout this piece why Obamacare is completely shredding that. She can't keep her plans, she can't keep her doctors, and it's just going to be miserable for her and for a lot of other people. Also, if you watched Fox News Sunday, Rahm Emanuel's brother, Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel, who was a behind-the-scenes architect of Obamacare, was on with Chris Wallace as well as Jim Capretta of the American Enterprise Institute, who did a very good job. Here's Chris Wallace and Ezekiel Emanuel going back and forth about, first of all, why does the Obama administration think it knows better about health care than the people who actually need the care?
Why does Betsy Tatter need you or President Obama telling her what insurance she needs?
For two reasons. First of all, if she goes in and that insurance doesn't cover enough, and which is typically what happens with these very low-cost plans, and she gets sick and it exceeds, typically we who are insured pay the difference. That's called cost shifting.
She likes her plan.
But we're cost shifting. The second thing is, just as we have safety standards for cars, you can't buy a car without a seatbelt, you can't buy a car without a airbag.
She is a woman who has a 24-year-old son. She's not going to have any more children. Obamacare includes maternity services, pediatric services, substance abuse services. That's not the airbag.
It is the airbag.
Not for her, it isn't. She's not going to need a maternity services.
We all share in the cost so that everyone can get it.
Betsy, anytime someone answers, why do you know better than everybody else, and they actually say two reasons, you know that humility is not at the hallmark of this effort. And I think we know why Ezekiel Emanuel was not exactly the face or the voice in promoting this plan before it was passed by Congress.
It's really fascinating to listen to that dialogue because, on the one hand, you know, the Emanuels are known for sort of this visceral bluntness. But on the other hand, it's really rare to hear someone say, yeah, you know, most American people don't know what literally is good for them on a health level. And that's why we need, you know, Washington bureaucrats deciding what is good for them. So, I mean, in a sense, it's almost kind of refreshing. Like, at least they're coming out and saying it.
I guess so. But man, especially with the rollout as bad as it is, I'm not sure that that is the message that they want. Obama, I thought, did a pretty dismal job in Boston last week. But Emanuel, both in his demeanor and in just what's implied by saying, yeah, you know, you're going to be paying for everybody else because that's what's fair, is just crazy.
I don't think there's been any news cycle involving Obamacare since the exchanges, you know, quote unquote, opened on October 1st that's been good for the administration. I really don't think there's been any, not that I can think of. I can't think of any good news that's come out of this entire process.
That might actually be the good news then. Betsy, on to Martini number three now. And Washington likes to salivate over their own when it comes to political nuggets. Mark Halperin and John Heilman had game change after the 2008 election. Now, after the 2012 election, their new book coming out is Double Down, Game Change 2012. Here's how CBS introduced this little nugget that we're going to talk about here. A new book covering the 2012 presidential campaign uncovers a series of scathing remarks from political figures, but one alleged comment has stirred controversy around President Barack Obama and his administration's use of targeted drone strikes. The book notes President Obama commenting on drone strikes, reportedly telling his aides he's really good at killing people. And this was in the Washington Post review, so it's not like somebody who's got it out for the presidential administration misinterpreted a line here somewhere. This doesn't sound like the guy who ran in 2008.
Oh, absolutely not. And what really struck me about this line is, you know, going back to this Wall Street Journal op-ed with the woman discussing how she thinks she actually might die sooner. I mean, this stuff would be funny if it didn't involve human beings dying. You know, you'd be like, BuzzFeed could do a listicle, 27 ways Obama has been killing people. it's like unreal. It's totally surreal. So I hope somebody at the Nobel Committee is scratching their head over that one. It speaks for itself. It's just amazing.
Every once in a while, you see the true colors here.
I'm really good at killing people. Like, it sounds like a Bond villain.
Betsy, thanks for filling in for Jim today. We'll talk to you later.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Betsy Woodruff of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. Jim will be back tomorrow. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. If there are elections where you are tomorrow, please be sure to get out and vote. And Jim and I will see you tomorrow on the 3 Martini Lunch.